Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 829. It's the 24th of July, 2017. On the podcast today, I have Daniel Betts, Managing Director of Hummingbird Resources at HUM. And Daniel discusses the progress they've made in quarter two and that they're on schedule for pre-production mining to commence in Q3 of this year at the Yanfolila Gold Project in Mali. Plus, I also have Paul Athley, Managing Director of Berkeley Energia, BKY's ticker, and Paul goes through some of the highlights from their quarterly report, where the development of the Salamanca uranium mine is continuing to progress well. I also have Marcus Engelbrecht, Chief Executive Officer of Stratix International, STI, talks through his strategy and the proposed acquisition of Crusader Resources. Plus, as always, it's a Monday, so Malki, Oil and Gas Sector Authority, talks about the following stocks: Providence Resources, Premier Oil, Pantheon Resources, Savannah Petroleum, and Falcon Oil and Gas. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Daniel Betts, Managing Director of Hummingbird Resources, ticker this HUM. Daniel, thanks for joining me.
Morning, Justin. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I was just saying, last time we chatted to you guys was over a year ago, and you said a lot has happened since then. I was checking out a video on your website. Very impressive, well-produced, and you said a lot of it was done with drone. You see that. It really, really comes across very well there. But people, we're getting to the news and what you've done since we last spoke in a bit. But before we get into that, Daniel, can you explain in summary, please, for people not aware of you, what Hummingbird Resources is all about, please?
Sure. Hummingbird Resources is a gold development company now, really. We started as a gold exploration company. We found gold. We did a transaction. We've financed and are now developing this gold mine in Mali that will come on stream before the end of this year. And then we will be a gold producer. And then we will look to build, I guess, the best in class next generation gold mining company. That's our ambitions.
Excellent stuff. Well, let's go through the last sort of RNS you released was an update. And you say pre-production mining is due to start, as you just said there, in Q3. So let's go through some of the, how far along you are. And also let's go through some of the figures, if we can, of how much it's costing, how much you can produce, and hopefully how much you're going to produce in cash flow. So let's start off with, at what level are you at, construction-wise then, Daniel?
Well, I mean, let's just go straight back to your first point, Justin, which is we haven't spoken for a year. I mean, I think when you're doing what we're doing and you're up against it every day, sometimes you don't look back. But actually, a year ago, we had not started this project and we hadn't funded it. So we were looking to find finance, I guess, when we last spoke. So in that period of time, we have financed the project. We raised over $70 million of equity. We then did a pioneering debt deal with a West African bank where we arranged a $60 million debt facility with a bank called Coris out of Burkina Faso, which I think gives us tremendous political support in the region and access to the power players in that region. So we're very happy with the way the project's financed. We've then built the construction team. Our EPCM contractors, Senad out of South Africa, have completed all the engineering. The procurement is all completed. The design work's all completed. Everything is now on site. Construction is nearly 75% complete. We've got 850 people at the moment on site. So it's all hands to the pumps. And work is ongoing across the spectrum of all the activities, the tailings facility, the plant area, the mining fleet are mobilizing with our contractors there called AMS. Power, water, everything is being installed, ready for a final push ahead of what we have broadcast to be production by the end of this year. And here we are in the end of July. So we're now 12 months into that sort of 17-month build program. And we are still on schedule and on budget. So, it's a big job, and I'm aware that there's a lot of challenges every day, but, I mean, I couldn't have asked for more than that when we spoke a year ago.
Yeah, it sounds pretty busy there. So you are all hands to pump, like you said. So let's go through ideally. So what's when you start producing? You said you start producing the end of this year. At what level is that, and what do you hope to ramp up to? And what are the figures around that, please, Daniel?
So when you turn the plant on, obviously you go through a period which is called commissioning, where you check every valve and pump, and you check mm-hmm. that the processes are all working. And that commissioning process can take some weeks. We've allowed 12 weeks, three months in our modelling. And during that commissioning period, you're ramping up. So you're 50% in the first month and 75%. Then you're hoping to get to nameplate or 100% capacity by, you know, the end of the third month. And at that point, we will be running a 1.24 million ton per year plant, and it will produce over 130,000 ounces in its first year of production. And to answer your second point, which is obviously fairly pertinent, I mean, 132,000 ounces at an all-in cost of $700 an ounce, which is what we approximately anticipate at this point, will give us free cash at this gold price of in excess of $70 million next year. So, I mean, I think it's clearly a monumental transformational event for Hummingbird Resources, and will put us in a totally different sphere.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's not far off, I suppose, you know, your market cap. So it's, that is transformational, unbelievable. So, so looking forward to that. And as far as, you know, the gold price is concerned, I mean, you know, do you have any concerns about that? You see it as more bullish of late? Or, I mean, like you said, all-in sustaining costs are well below where it is at the moment. So I suppose you don't worry too much, do you?
I don't want to sound too cavalier. I mean, you're speaking to the founder, CEO of a gold mining company. I'm obviously a gold bull. Mm. Our family's been in gold for 250 years. I think gold's going up, but then I've always thought that. So I think what I'd say is we want to offer investors exposure to the gold price. We don't want to take that optionality out by hedging it all. We don't think that investors would want to invest in a gold company if they wanted to see that risk removed. That said, and we are, for the record, completely unhedged. We have no protection in place at all for a downward gold price. That said, we also have $60 million of debt. So as a board, it's something we're actively debating, whether we should look at some point a small portion of protection to just make sure we don't, you know, risk the farm if the gold price was to go down. I think my view actually is fairly worthless. I mean, the gold price will do what it will do. I mean, no one really knows. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. Okay. So, what's the next big milestone, Daniel? You hope that you know investors or potential investors can look forward to.
Well, I mean, clearly the big one is producing gold this mm-hmm. year, and this year is now, we're talking weeks, not months. I mean, we're inside the last 5 months, and we've been, you know, we've nailed our colours to the mast, saying that we will deliver that. So, that's obviously a monumental milestone. But between now and then, I mean, there's all sorts of activities that we're doing. I mean, completing the plant construction, completing the pre-strip and getting ore to the ROM pad, electrifying and powering up the plant, and obviously recruiting the final few key positions for the plant operations rather than construction. So, you know, there's a lot to do. Everyone's pretty busy.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent stuff. Well, Daniel, if anyone's listening right now and they're liking the sound of this and they want exposure to gold and they're not following you yet on Voxo, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. I mean, firstly, gold production is imminent, and that will give us free cash that is, as you say, I mean, we'll be trading at 1.4 times our free cash flow, which would make us the cheapest gold company, I think, listed in the world on a basis of multiples to gold free cash flow. So that's the first reason. I'd say the second reason is anybody that thinks gold is a good place to be should look for leverage into gold, and we are the only listed gold company that is about to pour gold and complete building a gold mine. So I think that's the second reason. And the third reason is, I mean, I think Hummingbird is an unproven company. We've never built a gold mine before. That might sound counterintuitive, but we're young, we're ambitious, we are about to complete this task, and I think that will give us a massive opportunity for future growth and opportunities to build a, you know, a first-class gold mining company, not just a gold mine. So there's three reasons for you.
Excellent. Daniel, good to chat, and hopefully we'll chat again in a not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks a lot.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul Athley, Managing Director of Berkeley Energia. That's BKY. Paul, thanks for joining me.
Morning, Justin.
Now, you've released a quarterly report today, so we'll go through the bits, the highlights of that in a bit. Before we do so, Paul, for any people listening right now, tuning in for the first time, and they're not quite sure what you do, give us a brief summary of what you're all about, please, Paul.
We're building the only major uranium mine in the world today at a time when the uranium prices are at 12-year lows, and we're able to sell our uranium at twice the current spot price, and we're very, very highly leveraged into the future moves in the uranium price.
Excellent stuff. Well, so your update today, it gives a progress of where you're at. And so take us through some of the highlights of this, Paul, if you would. And I know, so first of all, I suppose it will start off with a timeline of when you hope to be producing.
That's right. The quarterly is a summary of all that we've done this quarter. And the big things to note are we've moved a very, very large piece of kit to site. It's called the primary crusher. It's going to be 17 meters high. And this is the main engine for the plant. This is the thing that will drive it and make all the production. So we'll commence constructing that, putting that in place shortly. And then we've got a 12 to 18 month timeline of constructing the mine and then commissioning it, putting it into production for ramping up to full production during 2019.
Excellent. And so what's left to do? What's the next big milestone here, Paul? Because I mean, it does say here, you mentioned the uranium spot price is at multi-year lows. It's rallied a little bit, but even though you've got you have deals in place to sell at $42. So, I mean, you are financially viable even at these levels. Is that the case?
We are indeed, and the quarterly highlighted a couple of things. One is that we're selling our uranium at average $42 a pound, mm-hmm. and that's when the spot price is at $20 a pound. The reason being is that a large proportion of the uranium market is contracted under what's called a term market. That's a 5-year contract with utilities. So we're selling into those and getting an indication of the demand because we're located in Europe rather than anywhere else they want to buy from us. So that's why we can sell. And the second thing that we highlighted in the quarterly was that we're very well advanced in our financing. So we've got quite a number of parties going through due diligence, and we've got about $60, $70 million to go. And that's, if you like, the final piece in the jigsaw.
Yeah, and I suppose it's worth saying, I mean, you know, your life of the mine there is based on Zona 7, but you're also exploring, aren't you?
We are. We've got a 15-year mine life to start off with, but we expect to be exploring every year. And we've got this fantastic geological endowment. We've explored only about 10% of the whole area, so 90% to go. And as long as we put money in each year into exploration, we expect to be able to maintain this 4.4 million pounds of uranium production a year, which will generate at current prices around $150 million EBITDA every year. We expect to maintain that on a long-term basis.
And for people not aware of the, you know, uranium as a commodity there, I mean, take us through the dynamics of the market and why you expect the price to rise in the coming years.
No, really good question. There's 65 nuclear reactors being built around the world. Nuclear power has been accepted by all developed economies as the base load for clean energy. So you need nuclear and renewables. And it's going to make up around 10 to 20% of all developed economies. So that's the big long-term demand for uranium. Because the price is so low, there are no new mines being constructed. And we are the only major uranium mine in the world being constructed today. And whilst the uranium market has been oversupplied, it's about to swing into deficit and will be coming into production just when the Chinese are looking for big demand for the 25 reactors they are constructing at a time when the Europeans and the Americans, with around 250 reactors, they're looking to recontract. So we're coming into production, we believe, at exactly the right time to capitalize on this new demand.
Yeah, and like I say, what's appealing about your project there in Salamanca is that it's, you know, not far away from major cities. It's in a developed country, and I suppose many of the uranium resources are in countries that are not too desirable.
It's a really good point. We highlight we benefit from the money that's been drawn down from the European Union by the Spanish authorities to build this amazing infrastructure. So our upfront costs are around $100 million, whereas for an equivalent mine anywhere else in the world, be around $250 million. We've got $150 million, if you like, infrastructure dividend courtesy of this excellent infrastructure that exists in Spain.
And so I suppose the $82.3 million question here, or euro question, is financing, Paul. So when do you hope to, put that in place? Will it be before the end of the year, or will it be next year, do you think?
We've said consistently looking at strategic partners and other financiers and aiming to have it in place by the middle of this year. So if you like, it's due for us to be able to continue with what we're talking about. We don't have a date for you. If we did, I would announce it. But we're, as we said in the quarterly, we've got a number of parties going through due diligence, and we're progressing them as fast as we can.
Excellent stuff. All right, Paul, all sounds good, and thanks for coming on. But for people listening right now, and they like the sound of this, and the fact you are one of the only companies building uranium mine at this point in the cycle, but they're not following you, and they think, maybe I should follow you. Could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please, on Vox Markets?
Number one, you make money in the resources sector by buying very, very high-quality assets at the bottom of the cycle, and there's no question we're at the bottom of the uranium price cycle. Number two is we can make money at the bottom of the cycle, so even if the uranium price stays lower for a longer period than we would hope, we can still make very good money. And thirdly, you've got some fantastic exploration upside.
Paul, good to chat to you, and hopefully speak again very soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Marcus Engelbrecht, Chief Executive Officer of Stratix International. That's STI ticker. Marcus, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. Good to be here today.
Now, for people not aware of you, of your company, could you give a sort of brief summary as to what you're all about, please, at Stratix?
I will do. Look, Stratix is an AIM-listed exploration company. It's been very successful over the last few years of taking development projects and joint venturing them out, very successful in its exploration intent. I joined the company in September last year. We have a very good project in Senegal called Dalafin. We have investments in a number of companies, one being Goldstone, which has a Ghanaian exploration project called Umasi Akrakiri. We have a 30% share in a private company called Thani Stratix. That's in West Africa. East Africa. That's in Egypt. That's the main project there is Anbat. We have a good project in Djibouti called Pandora. Both of those have shown exceptional drilling results over the last few months. We have a 15% share in a copper project in Turkey and 10% in a Tanzanian listed company called Tembo Gold.
Excellent stuff. Now, you just mentioned that you've been in the role for sort of 10 months. So can you tell us a bit about your strategy for Stratix, please, Marcus?
Thanks, Justin. Yes, I will. I mean, Stratix has been a purely early-stage exploration company for quite a number of years. But in the current cycle, it's becoming increasingly difficult to raise money. So in 2015, the executive and the board sat down and looked at funding mechanisms for the company going ahead. It came very clear that the market appetite had been decreasing over a number of years, and the board and the management recognized that to ensure long-term future of Stratix, we needed to have cash flow in the company. So they adopted a strategy of generating a project pipeline, not just from early stage, but right through to cash flow as well. And that's really something that I've been promoting and following since I joined the company.
Mm-hmm. So, are you actively sort of moving away from the exploration focus, are you?
Not at all. I mean, we're still very supportive of our investments, very supportive of early stage exploration. We believe as a mining company, we should be supporting both greenfields through to later stage and development projects. Okay. So very much still on board with exploration.
Yeah, I understand. All right. So you recently announced that you intend to acquire Crusader Resources. Can you tell us a bit more about that deal, please, Marcus?
Sure. Crusader Resources is an Australian-listed exploration company, and they've got some really compelling assets in Brazil. They have a very small iron ore producing operation, which is winding down. The one project they have is an asset called Borborema. That's about 150 kilometers from the coast on the eastern side of the country. It's a late stage project. They've done over 90,000 meters of drilling. They've completed a feasibility. They have their major license in place. There's one or two licenses that they still need, but I believe that with a focused program of optimization, probably 9 to 12 months, you can start building a gold mine. It's got 1.6 million ounces of reserve. It's very compelling and quite exciting. Mm. On the western side of the country, about 120 kilometers from Alta Floresta, they have a really exciting earlier stage gold project. This is called Juriena. They've had some compelling intercepts, some of them hundreds of grams a ton. We believe that with a year or two of focused exploration, we could take that to the next stage and probably add significantly to the economic reserve, and effectively then move that closer to a construction decision. Mm-hmm. So both of those assets really exciting. So the intent is to acquire this in Australia. That would be seen as a scheme of arrangement. It would be delisted in Australia. The combined company would be listed in London on the AIM. I would be CEO of this company. The Stratex board would still control the new board. We would bring the two main executives of Crusader, bring them on board as part of the executive team, and create a larger company, one in London, which I think will create a lot of excitement in the market.
Excellent stuff. So with this deal done, if it gets done, where do you see the company in 3 years' time, Marcus?
Well, in 3 years' time, I believe we could be a company that generates a cash flow. In effect, having a complete project pipeline from early greenfields exploration right through to production and generating significant cash flow for investment, not just in exploration, but in potentially other cash-generating opportunities.
I understand. If someone's listening right now, Marcus, and they're not following you and they like the direction you're taking this company in, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Well, to be honest, there's more than three. I mean, in London, there's very few opportunities for investors to go into a gold play that has an aggressive strategy to grow into a production company. You know, we're intending to build a strong team, although we already have a strong team in this merged entity, but to expand that even more and to look at expanding the production profile. We're going to have continual news flow going out into the market, which will be quite interesting. And I think shareholders and investors, potential investors, could get quite excited about what's going on. Obviously, the Crusader deal, that's something that's moving ahead quite quickly. I think it's critical if you're interested in our stock to make sure you're on top of that deal. And at the end of the day, you know, look at our strategy, look at what our intent is, where we're going, look at the individuals within the company, the executives and the board, and their experience and what they've achieved in the past, and just follow what we're doing and see as we as the strategy unfolds and as we implement what we said we're going to do.
Marvellous. Marcus, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
That'll be great. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Oil and Gas Sector Authority, Malky. You all right, fella?
Yeah, very well, thanks, Justin. And you?
Not too bad. It's odd to be back, and it feels like we feel like we've been away for a long time. It feels like that, you know. It feels like we've been away for months almost. But
the weather feels like it's October, so you know.
That's probably it. I was thinking it's damp and dreary. That's probably it. Yes, in fact. Okay, Malky, let's crack on. What were we chatting about?
Right. Well, I've got a number of stocks to chat about with things that have happened in the last couple of weeks. So I'm going to start off with Providence Resources,
yeah.
Where whilst we were away, They have spudded the Druid and Drombeg well, which is possibly the most exciting and interesting and biggest well that's been drilled in European waters for many years. Obviously, this is offshore Ireland. Yeah, Providence have been tight, you know, getting us excited about this for years, and they took a while. They struggled in terms of financing and everything else, but got finance. They've got all the way here. They've done a fairly sensible farm out, and they've got Total in there now, who can walk in. Should it be a success, but they've taken $27 million up front. So, you know, they've de-risked it to their. To a certain extent, or to a large extent for them. But they've done a very sensible deal there. It's a, you know, and effectively, you know, they if Total back in, Providence still, it's a, still a, what I would call a a company maker for Providence if it comes in. And it's a massive build for what, for potentially for all their other acreage in the area. So, you know, they've effectively announced that. The market is, and is quite right, quite right, should be very excited about this well. And I think that you know, we could see something, you know, most exciting.
Yeah, well, it's what, 5 billion barrels they're looking at there. But I mean, and the share price sort of rallied and it's come back off, and it's a bit of a damp squib. I expected to go much higher in this, considering what they're targeting. You know,
that's what I thought. And don't forget, you know, they've got themselves covered. They've taken the $27 million in up front, and Total can back into a 35% stake if it's announced as being successful. If not, they've still got a very strong balance sheet from the raise a while ago, and lots of other exciting stuff to drill as well.
Mm-hmm. I think it's you know, at this levels, it's definitely worth looking at. Okay, what's next, Malky?
The next one is Premier Oil, which I haven't mentioned for a while because it spent a lot of the last 12 or 18 months trying to sort out its huge debt pile, and has now got to the stage where that's all pretty much agreed. I think there are one or two final hurdles, but nothing major. So we can now get back onto to looking at Premier on a more operational level. And what do they do first thing after we do that? They come in with a potentially huge discovery in Mexico. This is, as they and one or two other independent firms are saying, this is a world-class discovery. This is a game changer for Premier in a sense, because the indication is that it's 1 billion barrels of oil in place. So that's 250 million barrels gross for Premier, maybe more. This will be substantial, although, you know, I jokingly referred to it as, you know, the last thing they want to do is to make another huge discovery because it's going to cost them to develop it. You know, that's very much tongue-in-cheek, because in this day and age, they could sell it or farm down or all sorts of things. And interestingly, they had their trading statement since then, where, you know, everything is going very well. Operationally, things have been going very well at Premier for ages. Production is ahead of guidance. Catcher is going to come on stream at the end of this year. So, subject to the usual summer maintenance, I'm expecting their production guidance to go up. And also, CEO Tony Durrant, in an interview last week, said that regarding Tolmont, which is a gas field in the southern North Sea, which they acquired recently, and turns out to be significantly bigger than even they might have hoped for. I suspect he said that they're going to do what they call an ingenious deal, whereby an infrastructure fund comes in and pays for the whole of the development and the platform and everything else and the pipeline, and takes a tariff on it. So, you know, when you're deeply in debt, somebody coming in to do that is absolutely fantastic. So if Premier does all the above, and then the shares are remarkably cheap. It also opens up the opportunity to do something with Sea Lion, because Rockhopper, for example, has been waiting for a long time to find out what they're going to do with Sea Lion, because you know they couldn't afford to do anything before. They're carrying on with the feed, the front end. And this might mean that with the balance sheet a little clearer, with production and therefore revenues coming in a bit higher than expected by the end of the year, we might see something happening on Sea Lion. So I think this is, over the last couple of weeks, we've had a lot of very good news for Premier Oil.
Yeah, and pretty much trading in a range, but sort of flatlining really between, a trading range between, I'd say 40 pence and what about 80 pence? They're at 55 at the moment, so...
They went up sharply. They went up sharply on the news of the fine, but I don't think... But there's no way that all these pieces of good news are yet in the price.
No, exactly. OK, and the next one, Marky, what's the next?
Pantheon Resources is a big favourite with the retail, and quite rightly too. You know, it's taken a long time. Our patience has been tested in this stock, just I have to say, with incompetent IR and unusually drilling has taken a long time, and they've had all sorts of problems. But those of us who kept faith and felt that they had a big discovery might at long last be being rewarded for that patience. A couple of things whilst you're away. They've signed a gas processing facility with Kinder Morgan, so they'll be producing from mid-September, certainly from their VOBM 1 and 3 wells. And then hopefully the two well, which I'll come back to in a minute, as well, which will fill the production facility, and with costs under $5 a barrel of oil equivalent, they'll start making serious revenue for Pantheon, and you know that will come up in the space of 3 months now. So people who were worried that they weren't going to get revenue from all this should be less concerned about that. They've also announced today that the frac crew has been signed for the number two well that I was referring to. It's not a very big frac job, this, actually. It's they say 2 to 3 weeks. I'd be surprised if it took that long, funnily enough. But they're starting that on the 4th of August. So we're expecting to hear good news from that, hopefully by the end of August. If it works as I think it will, they'll just put the production straight into the facility that they've started. So that'll be good news for them. Yeah. And they've also announced that the other well, the number four well, which is due to be sidetracked, and they've announced a deal with the service company there. That'll start in 3 or 4 weeks. So I think, maybe middle to end of August there. And that'll take 30 days or so to drill and to test. The bottom line is that after a long wait, Pantheon is becoming interesting again. And for those of us who believe it and believe that the story is going to be there, and they prove up they're starting to get revenues, won't need to raise money again, and some serious value in what they've got. Pantheon is always one of these companies which was planning on effectively selling in due course, which I think they'll do. So I think you hang on in there.
Yeah, well, the share price is pretty much... Well, looking at it, it's a nightmare for people who invested higher up, I suppose, but at the moment, you've got to say interesting levels, because it's at a level now where it gapped up. When was that? Back in 2015, at the end of 2015, it gapped up for some reason, obviously on good news there, between 40-odd pence, but now it's back down there, so it may prove some support, that 40-odd pence level, you never know.
I think it should do, but the trouble is, because of the various difficulties they've had with drilling, and a lot of the investors have just completely run out of patience with them, which shows that, it pays to have good investor relations and not to muck about the market, which is, the market don't forget these sort of things, like an elephant. So
yeah, exactly. Marvellous stuff.
They've got to deliver the goods now.
Cool. All right, Malky, anything else?
Yeah, I got a couple of quick ones.
Go on.
Savannah Petroleum, which is an old favourite. I think you've seen them as well. It was leaked out that they are in talks with, they mentioned some weeks ago that they're in discussions with somebody for what might be a substantial and therefore reverse takeover. It leaked out last week that the company is Seven Energy in Nigeria. No great surprise to company watchers there. But speaking to the company, there's no doubt that if this comes off, what they want it to, that this will be a transformational deal for Savannah and for the company. And I understand that Andrew Knott is very excited about it, and takes quite a bit for Andrew Knott to get excited about stuff. So I'm very positive about this. We know that they've got.
Do you know much about them, Malachy? So Seven Energy, do you know much about that company or not?
Yeah, funny enough, I do actually, because I used to look at it in the old days when Petrofac had an investment in it, and it just got a bit stale, and it didn't have any drive to it. And this potentially, I mean, if it was run by Andrew Knott and put together with the Savannah portfolio, would be absolutely fascinating. And it would be an interesting addition to. I mean, there's a huge amount of upside in Savannah for their Niger play. Don't forget, if we hadn't heard about the Seven Energy stuff, that we'd be expecting sometime in August, I suspect, spudding of the 3-well program in Niger. Mm-hmm. So Savannah was due to go into the bucket list, but missed out by 24 hours because it then got suspended, because this is a big RTO and therefore is suspended at the moment. But when it comes back from suspension, subject to whatever price it is, I would be looking at this very carefully. As I say, it's a potentially transformational deal for Savannah, and I don't think that the market will have understood it yet. I think that Andrew Knott is doing a great job at Savannah, and I think that there's lots of upside, so I'm very pleased about that.
Marvellous. Anything else, Maggie?
One quick one. A number of your investors will be in Falcon Oil and Gas, which is a company which has got involvement in the Beetaloo unconventional discovery in the Northern Territories in Australia. I'd just like to point out that we've been looking at it, and they've announced that when the Labour government got in, they announced an immediate moratorium on fracking, so everything came to a grinding halt. But Origin, who are the operators, who are a fantastic bunch of people, are not going to quit this for one minute. And in fact, what we got last week was the first indications that the report from the independent adjudicator, who's a judge, in doing the inquiry into the fracking, is beginning to look like they are taking on board everything, and it may well come out as being, provided that everything is looked after well, and the worries are things like water and aquifer worries, which they've already said looks like it's okay, plus things like reinjection, and the companies have satisfied that already. With social policies, which should help the local area. My feeling is beginning to be that the report, which has to be with the government by the end of the year, which I read as being end of October, because they need 6 weeks to look at it before they close down for Christmas, say 15th or 16th of December. So, you know, Falcon had a good run-up because one or two people decided that although there was a danger the moratorium wouldn't be lifted. The upside is huge here. I mean, there are a significant amount of TCF of gas here. Mm-hmm. Australia is ironically domestically gas short, whilst it has huge operations on the East Coast, which sell LNG up to the Pacific Rim, and huge discoveries of gas off the Western Coast. The Australian government has, to put it plainly, copped up big time on the domestic. So, ironically, the domestic market is short of gas. So I find it very difficult to believe that the Northern Territory government, with the support of a decent report from an independent judge, and aware that they'll be able to take a decent takeoff of this gas, so that it'll make their money and they won't be responsible, that I think that by the end of the year, this is going to get the all clear. So if you've got, if you're looking at Falcon or you've got some, I think you're in a pretty strong position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, marvellous. That's F-O-G, by the way. Fog, isn't it?
That's correct.
Excellent, Malky. Thanks for the update, fella. Speak next week.
Yeah, look forward to it, Justin. Bye now.
OK, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They were, at five, Alba Mineral Resources, A-L-B-A. By the way, George from Alba is coming on the podcast very soon, and by all means, submit a question. I'll put a link here if you want to do that on the blog page, and I'll put that just below this little section here. So do that, submit a question if you want George to answer that. At four, Rose Petroleum, R-O-S-E, ticker there. At three, most followed, UK Oil and Gas, UCOG. At two, Ariane Silver, A-G-Q. And number one, most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. No surprise, it's in the top five very often. It's Ascent Resources, A-S-T. That's it for the podcast. By all means, if you like the podcast, if you listen to it regularly, please give me a positive review and five-star rating on iTunes, and I will read out your review. I'll get round to that this week, guaranteed. Thanks very much for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.